We're putting more people than ever in prison. But does prison work? New evidence from Norway suggests that, for many people, it does. Welcome to Vox Talks, a series of conversations with leading economists. My name is Tim Phillips. In a developed world, incarceration rates are going up. In the US, for example, judges send three times as many people to prison now as they did in 1980. It takes convicted criminals out of the population, but for the prisoners themselves, does time behind bars teach crime or deter it? A new CEPR discussion paper called Incarceration, Recidivism and Employment gives us an ingenious way to investigate this question, using data from Norway's prison population and the differences between its judges. Now, Gordon Dahl, one of the authors of the paper, is here to explain how they did it and what they found out. Gordon, welcome to Vox Talks.
Hello, Tim.
Some people will be surprised, Gordon, by the number of people we're sending to prison and how that's gone up in recent years. How has this happened?
Yeah, so there's a little bit of history that explains how we went from not incarcerating very many people to incarcerating as many as we do today. There was a very influential report back in 1974 released by Robert Martinson. And what it did is it took all of the best research at the time and it said, you know, we just can't rehabilitate prisoners. And it came up with what's been known as the nothing works doctrine. Once a criminal, always a criminal. So what this did is people started saying, well, if we can't rehabilitate prisoners, we might as well lock them up so that they can't commit more crime. So that was really a pivotal point in the U.S. Rehabilitation started to take a backseat in favor of prison policies, which just emphasized punishing and incapacitating people for as long as possible. And that's why we had a tripling of U.S. incarceration rates over those ensuing decades.
But at the moment, we have the state where some politicians and campaigners tell us that prison works as a way to cut crime, and there are others who say it doesn't work, and we don't know for sure. So after all this time, why not?
Well, so I think the challenge is that we have largely just looked at correlational effects. And what I mean by that is people have said, when they get out, do they commit more crime? And unsurprisingly, they do. And the point is that these people were probably going to be committing crime even if they hadn't gone to prison. So we were just stuck with correlations, and we didn't really know whether or not there was what economists would call a causal effect. Did the fact that you went to prison cause you to commit more crime, or were you the type of person that was just going to be committing more crime anyway? And is there any way that prison itself could have reduced the amount of crime you committed? Now, to make this point really clear, some people say, let's just look at people who go to prison and then see what happens before and after they go to prison. The problem is that usually something happens which makes someone ready to go to prison. It sort of shocks them to go to prison. Maybe someone loses their job and that's why they commit crime and that's why they go to prison. Well, it shouldn't be a surprise when they get back out of prison that they don't have a job because they lost their job before they went to prison. So maybe this is just a long way of saying we've been not very good at knowing what the effect of prison actually is because we haven't had well-designed methods to study its effect.
Which brings us back to the work that you've done on this. We'll get to exactly how you managed to establish that causal relationship in a minute. But first of all, why Norway? You chose to look at Norway's prison population. And what's special about the data that you can get from Norway?
Well, I think the first thing is that the data is fantastic in Norway. It doesn't exist for many countries. So what we can do is we can follow people before they go to prison, while they're in prison, after they're in prison. We can follow all of their crime for the entire country, as well as all of their employment history. So it's really a fantastic data set that allows you to actually track the whole dynamic of someone's interactions with the criminal justice system and the labor market. This kind of data, by the way, is starting to become available in the U.S., but it's really hard to get that data to work because of some of the logistics of how the U.S. protects its data. The second great thing about Norway is that we have a chance to get a good causal estimate. Now, let me back up and say, what would we ideally like to do if we could do anything? What we'd like to do is we'd like to get people who are accused of a crime and randomly send some to prison and not others to prison. And then we'd see, well, what happens after they're released from prison? Does their crime go up or down? Of course, that's just not ethical. You can't randomly send some people to prison. But it turns out that in Norway, something like that actually happens. So in Norway, which judge you get to handle your case is randomly assigned by law. It's a great example where the law literally says you have to randomly assign the judge to a case unless there are very extenuating circumstances. So judges don't specialize. Well, here's the interesting fact. Some judges are much stricter at sending accused criminals to prison compared to others. And so what this does is it generates random probability that someone will be sent to prison versus not. Did you get the strict judge or the lenient judge? If you got the strict judge, your chances of going to prison are randomly higher compared to the judge who's more lenient.
So although in other countries there are strict and not so strict judges, they might be assigned to particular cases, particular types of defendants, and so therefore we can't establish this causal relationship.
That's right. And also in the U.S., there's plea bargaining. So if you know that you have a strict judge, you might plea bargain so that you don't actually have to go to court trial with that judge. Once again, no plea bargaining in Norway. Economists would call this a natural experiment. It's an experiment which occurred naturally in the population, but which wasn't intended to be an experiment. That's the variation we're going to be using. We're going to compare people who got the strict judge versus the lenient judge and see what happens to them.
So what did you find out? Did you find out that prison discourages people from committing crimes?
Yeah, our first real result is that imprisonment does discourage further criminal behavior. So here's the key take-home message. Incarceration, meaning being sent to prison, actually lowers the probability an individual will reoffend within 5 years by 27 percentage points. That's a big drop. And it reduces the corresponding number of crimes they commit by 10. So they commit about 2 fewer crimes per year. Now, you might say, well, maybe this is just because you lock them up. But this is not the whole story. It's not just an incapacitation effect, because these drops in reoffending occur even after the defendants are released from prison. So it looks like people are actually committing less crime after going to prison.
This is the exact opposite of nothing works and a lot of other existing research that we have. And it's even the opposite result to what you got when you tried an alternative method in this paper. What has gone wrong with existing research?
Well, so the alternative method you're talking about is if we did correlations.
Mm-hmm.
So if we do a correlational analysis and we try to control for all of the demographic factors, the type of crime you committed, your previous criminal history, your past employment, you get exactly the opposite result. You find that going to prison increases your crime when you get out. So what does this mean? What it means is there are still some things that we just can't control for, because apparently when you actually have random assignment and you get a causal effect, you get a very different answer than these correlational studies. It's impossible, at least with existing data, to control for all of the factors that determine what kind of proclivity a criminal might have for committing crime in the future.
And do the people who've been doing this research know that their conclusions are flawed in this way, but it was the best that they could do in the circumstances?
I think that's very fair. You know, people know the limitations and you do what you can with the data. I will point out that there are some newer work which people are trying to push. There's one example in the U.S. by Mike Mueller-Smith, which tries to use a similar random judge design. There's still plea bargaining, but it's close to random design there. And he finds the opposite. With one county in Texas, he finds that actually going to prison increases recidivism, makes you more likely to commit crime, which is sort of an interesting result because it's exactly opposite what we find, isn't it?
So we haven't quite resolved the question yet. Gordon, do all prisoners have the same response to being in prison? We've given the headline figure.
Yeah.
Or are there different effects on different groups?
That's a very good question, because it turns out that this drop in crime I told you about is driven by individuals who were not working prior to incarceration. Most people who go to prison haven't been working at all for the last 3, 4, or 5 years. So if you take that group of people who've not been working in the formal labor market and send them to prison, you'd get them to commit less crime. But it turns out that we've also showed causally that it increases your participation in training programs while you're in prison and afterwards. And it also increases your employment and earnings once you get out of prison. So for this group, prison seems to sort of reset their lives. It helps them get back in the labor market. It helps them stop committing as many crimes. Now, these are big effects for that group. I want to contrast that with another group. For the other half of people who've had at least a little bit of employment, some connection to the labor market in the last 5 years before imprisonment, those people see no reduction in crime. They actually are probably hurt a little bit because they lose the job they had before they went to prison and they never really recover. So their employment rate goes down substantially. So there is this big difference between people who were not working and people who were working prior to being sent to prison.
Now, we focused on Norway as a particularly good source of data, but as you mentioned with the alternative research coming out of the United States from Texas, perhaps Norway is not typical of the prison population in general, either in the type of people who get sent to prison or the types of prisons they go to. So how much do we know about how typical Norway is?
So the types of offenses committed by inmates, while they differ a little bit between the US and Norway, a lot less than you might expect. So the US has many more homicides. But other than that, they're actually surprisingly similar. So it's not really the type of crimes. It's also not even really the type of people being sent to prison, although the US has more hardened criminals. Really, the biggest difference is how many people the US is sending to prison and for how long. In the US, the average prison sentence length is about 3 years compared to 6 months in Norway. So that's the first big difference. And you can just see that being in prison 3 years, that could really harden a person. It could make it harder to get a job and be re-employable once you get out, whereas 6 months is a disruption in your life, but not as long of a disruption. So that's the first thing I'd point out. The incarceration rates, they are 7 times higher in the US, but at least half driven by these larger sentence lengths. By the way, you shouldn't really think about Norway as the outlier. You should think about the US as the outlier. No other country has as many people in prison as the US, as a fraction of its population. The closest countries, which are about half of the US, are countries like Rwanda, El Salvador, Turkmenistan, Thailand, Cuba, Russia. Norway's more like most of Europe, which has a very similar incarceration rate. I think that's the biggest difference, is the U.S. is just sending more people to prison and for a long time, which could really harm both their mental health and their ability to be reemployed. Let me move secondly to the prison conditions, because the prisons are very different in Norway. They really want to follow what they call a principle of normality. They don't want life inside a prison to be so different from life outside. So they actually have 2 types of prisons. They have what they call open prisons and closed prisons. And in an open prison, it resembles more what you might consider a Spartan dormitory. You know, there's not bars on the cells. You use a shared kitchen, things like that. And what they're trying to do is put the less serious offenders in this kind of environment. There's also a difference in overcrowding. So in the US, and particularly in Texas, there's massive overcrowding. Norway has a policy of 1 prisoner per cell to ensure safety and not let people get abused. 2 other things I'd mention briefly that happen in Norway. When you're in prison in Norway, you either have to have a job or be in a training program, or be mentally incapable of doing either of those two. So they're not going to let you sit in prison and do nothing. Along with that, they have pretty big post-release support. So they have an emphasis on helping these offenders reintegrate into society. They give them lots of active labor market programs. They try to help ex-convicts find jobs and social support services like housing support. So the U.S. really does have a very different prison system. Going to prison in Norway is a completely different experience than going to prison in the U.S.
Is there much that the paper can tell us about the usefulness of prisons in society and the usefulness of custodial sentences for prisoners that we didn't suspect before?
Yeah, I think what it says, and maybe this is a summary of what we've been talking about, is with a focus on rehabilitation, you actually can help people reintegrate into society. But it comes with a cost, right? It is more expensive, but it comes with these potential benefits. I think that's sort of the lesson to take away from our paper.
And a lot of people would say we're spending a great deal on prisons already. Are you saying we should be spending more?
That's a very good question. Are the costs of this more Norwegian-style prison worth the benefits? Well, the reform, if you were to follow the Norwegian system, might be a little more affordable than it initially appears. Why? If we were really to be like Norway, prison sentences would be 1/5 as long. And so just by that alone, prison would be much, much cheaper. If we were to adopt shorter prison sentences, you could spend the extra money on the rehabilitation programs, on the job training, on the drug treatment programs, and easily still be within your budget. Another way to think about this, though, is, well, what are the benefits of reducing future crime and helping people have jobs in the future? Well, we did kind of a quick calculation that said, what if you tried to take into account the fact that people are working more when they get out of jail? Well, that will reduce expenditures on safety net programs and increase tax revenues. What about the victimization costs? If these people are committing fewer crimes in the future, doesn't that have a benefit to society as well? So it's hard to get at victimization estimates, but our best guess is easily just on the victimization costs alone, the benefits of giving a Norwegian-style prison more than pay for themselves. And finally, because people aren't going to prison again, and because they're not in the court system, you save a lot of money on court costs. Once again, that by itself can also justify the higher expenses. To summarize, there's lower victimization costs, there's lower court and prison costs in the future, there's higher employment, which means less reliance on safety net programs and higher taxes, and those 3 things combined more than pay for the high costs of the Norwegian system.
Do you think, Gordon, though, that in the current political environment that a message like this comes across, or are we very focused at the moment on punishment and longer punishments?
So many people are focused on punishments, but I think this idea of longer punishments is starting to get kicked back even in policy circles. People are starting to say, for low-level offenses, are we helping the person or hurting them by sending them to prison for a long period of time? You might be right that not everyone's ready to hear this, but I think many people are open to the idea that what we're doing isn't working because it has these apparent recidivism effects when we send people to prison. In other words, many people are open to the idea that something needs to change.
Gordon Dahl, thank you very much.
Great. Thank you, Tim.
A reminder that the paper's called Incarceration, Recidivism and Employment, and its authors, alongside Gordon, are Manudeep Bula, Katrina Loken and Manya Moldstad. It's CEPR discussion paper 13215. Now, for a different type of incapacitation effect in a different type of institution, listen to our recent Vox Talk with Steve Machin on the impact of attending school on crime rates. This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. Find us every week on your podcast platform or on the Vox EU website at voxeu.org/vox-talks.